I had actual contact with you, and after all the fuss at the university because you used a typewriter, they said you had stolen university property and all that nonsense. I went down to the Navy recruiting base in College Station to bat for you. I told them that the information they had received about you, saying that you were not fit for entry into the Navy, which of course was given by Professor Cotton.
God bless him.
They told them that was all nonsense. You were a splendid fellow, and I hoped that you would do well and be a submarine commander and all that. And indeed, as far as I know, they rescinded the note they had given you saying you no longer wanted.
Right.
And the last I heard of it, you were wanted.
Yeah, apparently.
Now, then the next thing comes to what happened to Professor Cotton. Do you know what happened to him?
Well, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but he passed away under unusual circumstances, and the information I came across suggested that his investigation was open, suggesting there could have been foul play.
Well, all I know about it is entirely through my former secretary, Janet, who worked with me for 26 years.
And she called me up.
What?
Yes.
She called me up one day and told me that Professor Cotton had gone out in the garden one evening, telling his wife he'd be back in 10 minutes. After a certain time, she went out in the garden to find him. Garden is perhaps an understatement, because it's a very large, several acres plot where they keep horses, or they kept horses. And what she found was, yes, he was there on his back and probably unconscious, but the telling thing was his face was terribly messed up, as though it had been punched and punched and been made into a mess. Of course, she called an ambulance, and all the rest I know is that he was taken to the hospital in the College Station and lived for a considerable time, like 3 months or several months. He then got ill, not directly from the way he had been assaulted, but in some other way, a pneumonia or something like that. I don't know. I'm making this part up.
Right.
And then he died. But now, you know, how much his death was due to how he'd been treated in the garden and how much it was due to pneumonia or some other illness, I have no idea. And what I gather from Janie, whose only contact is through the local newspapers, is it generally regarded as something of a mystery. But if you put the facts together, now be very careful, because what I'm now going to say is a speculation.
Sure.
It seems to me as though somebody decided to give him a very nasty end. And who that somebody was, of course, the police were the most likely people to know, but having been so much in contact with him for 20 years, I know that he was an extremely aggressive and very rude and damaging person, who you were only one of those whom I knew he attacked. And I could tell you stories about Professor Cotton, which are similar to yours, that he gets his knife into somebody and he tries to persecute them. He's very determined, and he will write letters just like he wrote for you, against you, and try to destroy their reputation. And so I speculate that he tried to do that to someone who had the money to have him removed. I don't know whether they meant to kill him or what, but I think that he was beaten up by somebody who was paid to do it.
Probably.
There must have been several people there, or at least two, because although he was already by that time, he's 10 years younger than me, so by that time he was already in his early 60s, yet he was a quite normal person who would have defended himself. So the fact he was really beaten up and obviously punched and really damaged by something or somebody, it must have been two people, I suppose. And I just think they waited for him in the garden and caught him and beat him. And that's, of course, as I preface these remarks by saying, the speculation, but it does fit the facts.
Sounds like a Eugene Maloff type of attack.
Yeah. Well, we don't know who ended Maloff's life. I don't know whether anything new has turned up there, but I understand that he entered a house which belonged to him or his mother or something, and he went there to repair it. And what he found inside the house was four people. And all we know after that, that he was killed by force. They beat him up again or did something to him to end his life. And I now speculate that it was a drug thing. Probably the house had been empty for some time, and maybe these people who were inside it were drug habits people who went there to smoke. And but again, this is speculation, like I said about cotton.
Sure.
And then what happened was that he was not, maybe he tried to fight back. He was very aggressive and much younger than Cotton. And perhaps he probably tried to fight them and was killed in the fight. Anyway, he's a great loss to us. Great tragedy.
Yes. Well, it seems like the LENR or cold fusion community is persistent enough. The technology will make it into mainstream consciousness in a positive way.
Hello, are you still there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. I would summarize it like this, that the official organs of American science had not yet accepted cold fusion. The Electrochemical Society, which should be most happy because it all happens through electrochemistry, still don't publish papers. However, there are evidence for 1,000 peer-reviewed papers that have been published, and 3,000 if you include the papers presented at meetings, which of course are not always peer-reviewed. So between 1,000 and 3,000 papers, however you want to classify a paper, have been published in the field, and a textbook, a very good textbook, published, I would say, a year ago. I have it just in my 3 or 4 inches away from where I'm talking now, and it's a fine job. I did have a bit to do with it. I was the referee, and I was asked to monitor it all the way. But anyway, it has sold well, and I think it's done a bit of good. There are some very energetic people keeping up what is being done, and there is the yearly meeting. And apart from the yearly meeting, there are other national meetings in Russia, and Italy, and Japan, which keep the thing going.
Right.
So it's just a matter of waiting for them to. My son is coming. Just a moment.
Your physical therapist wants to make an appointment for 5 o'clock tomorrow.
Oh, good. Fine.
That's good.
But no, I don't understand.
When's she coming?
She's coming at 5 o'clock tomorrow.
Tonight.
Tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow. That's fine. 5 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
Okay. She's gone out of the room now. He's just making an appointment.
Good.
Okay, yes, well, there we are. So, you were quite something in my life, and I remember you very well. You were on my side, so to speak, and I was on your side.
Yes.
So we helped each other for a short time.
It's curious, Dr. Cotton would say that I stole a typewriter because I actually donated a computer to the mechanical engineering department while I was there. So that wouldn't... That type of accusation wouldn't have gone very far.
Well, it seems to me that you're well set on an army career then.
At this point, yeah, I have over 20 years in service, and if the economy were set to collapse, I would be looking forward to a retirement, but I believe we will be transitioning into a post-hydrocarbon fuel society in a way that will not afford us the opportunity to enjoy the status quo for much longer than perhaps two more years.
Are you going to go to Iraq or Afghanistan?
Well, it's always possible, but I'm locked in to an assignment at a reactor facility in Bethesda, Maryland. So that's probably where I'll remain for the next 2.5 years. After that, I'm supposed to finish up at an intelligence facility.
But have they utilized your scientific abilities?
Well, it was the most technical assignment I could find as a senior reactor operator. So that's good. Mm-hmm. I'm working on a PhD in nuclear engineering, but I don't know if I'll have enough time to finish it up before the economy makes that very difficult.
Well, yeah, the economy is very difficult to see. I think I write many letters about all this. I think the main problem to the United States is nothing to do with Iraq or nothing to do with Afghanistan. I think it's China. I think the main problem we have is that for various reasons, should take half an hour to discuss, the Chinese have a fantastically vigorous and growing economy. And I think come any time like tomorrow, they will be the most powerful country economically in the world. And I think they will meet us economically on every level. I think they're not yet making cars, which they exploit, but I did have a memo from someone who supplies me the so-called inside information the other day, and he said that he had information, or whatever you call it, that they are going to convert to wind and solar and electricity in 11 years.
Okay.
That would be a fantastically quick conversion. I think most of us would predict 30 years, but they say they will convert in 11 years. And, of course, if China converts to electricity and wind and solar, I believe that's the beginning of the end for the oil industry. Of course, there are many people who believe in global warming, etc., who'll be very happy about that. It's clear that ExxonMobil will be very unhappy about it. And I can't think of the only giant I think might defeat ExxonMobil is China. But I certainly wouldn't like to be on the other side of a battle between China and myself or my organization, because I think the Chinese are very, very powerful indeed, largely because of numbers and because of the vigor with which they work. I don't know if you've actually met people who've been to China in the last few years. I haven't been there for 20 years, so all the wonders that people describe are not there when I was there. But everyone who comes back sort of says, wow! And they describe a fantastically fast building economy, which is amazing to everybody.
Yeah, I'd agree.
So I think that it's going to move fast, and it's going to move in the direction of electrochemistry, which of course is my subject, basically. And in a way, I'm very pleased. If it's true, now mind you, I only have one report, and it was one of those private investment reports, it says I have heard that, so it's not verified. But it just sounds typical of the Chinese to make that announcement. What is more definite, and of course much less significant, is that the Danish government has announced, this is 99% true, that they are converting to wind and solar and electricity, and all their cars are being converted. They speak of Renault, Nissan, as the people who are making, because the Danish government is going to set up sufficient wind generators to provide the electricity. So that's, of course, far less significant because Denmark is a tiny country. But I think it's the way things are going.
Yes, it has to. There's so much of an economic imbalance resulting from importing oil from the Middle East and other oil-producing countries.
Well, if the Chinese develop it, if the rumor that I'm putting to you with due caution from China is correct, then the oil and the oil mehemet, as you might call it, the oil imperium, has a limited life. So it's 20 years or something like that. But within 20 years or so of the Chinese converting, I think we should all convert, because China has such an economic pressure. Suppose that the USA tried to go it alone. The Chinese would import into the USA extremely cheap cars. The Indians have shown they can make a car for four people and all kinds of safety precautions and so on for $2,500. Now, all right, let's make it $5,000.
Right.
But it's extremely cheap. And the Chinese, I'm sure, can do that. And where would we be? I don't know. And I think they would do something like that if we tried to fight them.
Yeah, it's difficult to know how it's all going to unfold, but the information I've come across to date from all sources considered suggests that the U.S. economy is targeted for collapse, meaning very powerful people have made a decision to intentionally compromise our economic standing so that we cannot rise against nations that are...
And when you talk about very powerful people, do you mean inside this country or outside?
Yes, both. They're working together. That's my understanding. I'm always open to new information, but I can't explain everything I've come across any other way, really. There has to be a centralized group of people who are orchestrating various actions globally, and unfortunately, the United States is no longer in favor, if you will.
Well, there's no doubt about, if I look back, I've been in this country about 58 years now. Most of my life has been here. Of course, I started in England, but I've been here since 1953, and there's no doubt about it. The situation has changed most drastically since 1953. And in those days, of course, the United States was leading in everything. And, you know, I think back to the days of Pan American Airways. If you wanted to go to Europe, you made a booking with Pan Am. That was the only place you really looked to. Now, of course, you can fly in every damn air organization in the world. But it's all changed, and it's changed against us. I think we're vulnerable, particularly in education. I think that the heart of our weakness is in the high schools.
Yes.
And the element. And just to give you one single example, my daughter teaches 9-year-old kids in San Francisco. And one of the things she tells me is that she's been instructed that she must not tell them what is right or wrong. Why not? Oh, well, how would she know what is right or wrong?
That sounds like San Francisco, yeah?
It's not too good for the country if the kids, 9-year-old kids, are being not told what is right or wrong. We really are in a mess.
Yeah.
Anyway, are you a Mr. or a Doctor or a Colonel? What should I call you?
I'm just Todd. My day job is the military for now, so everything I do outside of normal working hours is as a volunteer, independently of the military.
Yeah. Well, you've got my telephone number. You can always call me up. I should always be glad to talk with you.
How do you see things unfolding in the LENR community right now?
Yeah. Well, very good wishes to you. And call me if I can possibly help.
All right, sir. Thank you for your time.
Bye-bye.
It's good to hear from you.